Today's episode of the Sacktown Royalty Show is brought to you by Audible.com, a leading provider in spoken audio information and entertainment. Listen to audiobooks whenever and wherever you want.
It's the Sacktown Royalty Show. Here's your host, Greg Wissinger.
Welcome to the Sacktown Royalty Show. I'm your host, Greg Wissinger. Welcoming back to the program, friend of Sacktown Royalty, Carmichael Dave. How you doing, man?
Oh, wow. You must be desperate. 4 years in between appearances. And boy, it's worth it only to find out that it's Wissinger and not Wissinger. That's good. I'm complete now.
Well, you know, we had such a clamoring from the fan base that so many people just wanted to hear more from Carmichael Dave, so we had to bring you back on.
Oh, dear Lord. Yeah, well, let me see if I can guess the comments. So people are listening to this and hopefully following along with the comments right now. So let me see. Otis is probably going to say, I'd rather eat a razor blade. That Rick Smits guy will probably wonder how I had time to be on this podcast when I'm sitting front row eating popcorn and being a shill. And then 30 other people will say something else. Man, please don't ever post anything I ever say ever on Sacktown Royalty. It is horrific for my fragile little ego.
Well, to be fair, you are eating popcorn right now courtside while we record, right?
Well, yeah, but only because it's King's brand popcorn, so it's free, like everything else in my life, of course. Yeah, it's a charmed life, Greg.
Well, if that fits with the site, you know, aesthetic, because we're all on the payroll too, we're told.
Well, you know, and it's amazing that you're able to make such a living from a garbage blog like Sacktown Royalty. we're all shills, dude. We're all getting paid, brother.
So let's find some positive spin on what was just a devastating week for the Kings, with Rudy Gay going down, the torn Achilles, and they confirmed, we're recording this on Thursday, confirmed today, full rupture of the Achilles. I mean, he's out. We knew the whole season, but he's out for an extended period into next season. I mean, how do you even begin to react to something like this?
Well, I'd like to say that by this point, wouldn't you think by this point you'd be numb, you know, with, I mean, when was the last time, the last real positive, extended positive with this franchise was obviously the staying and then the years leading up and the celebrations and all that. But I can't remember the last time that the on-court outweighed the off-court when it came to positives, because wins, losses go back way before new ownership. You know, we're talking over a decade. But I'm not numb, and I don't think you are, and I don't think most people listening to this are. It just sucks, and you just continually wonder why, you know, is this penance for saving, you know, for keeping the team? Is this the – I said on my radio show this morning, I kind of went on a little soliloquy. I said, you know, I get a lot of questions as to why I don't kill Vivek and I don't kill the ownership more, and I'm going to be very transparent. I said – on my own podcast, on the radio, on other radio shows, many, many, many times. I said, if somebody came up to me and said, you can keep this team in Sacramento, you guys can keep it, but you have to go 0-82 for 5 years. I would take that deal in a heartbeat. I think if most people were being honest and they remember back to the bad times, the Chris has more, binding agreement, Seattle, you know, all that crap, I think most of us would have taken that deal. So for some stupid-ass reason in my head, that pops up every once in a while where I go, okay, we're in year four, I think, of five, and we've got the arena. And I know that nobody wants to hear, hey, we're not in Seattle, or hey, at least we have Golden Wall. I totally get that. But I just think this ownership group, they're babies right now. That's the analogy I use. Babies try to walk and they crap their pants and they figure it out, you know? And if there's one thing I know about them, it's that they are obsessed with winning. The ownership group's obsessed with winning. I have no doubt about that, and I'll debate that to anyone's face. But I don't think they have any idea at this point how to win And it's just a matter of we're watching a little baby ownership group crap its pants over and over and over again. And it's a long-winded answer because the ownership group had nothing to do with Rudy Gay getting hurt, but it's the exposure provided by Rudy being on the team at this point in the first place, coupled with about 50,000 other horrific decisions that put us in this mess where the first thing you said is, what's the positive? What's the bright side? Or however you put it. And there isn't one. This is a horrifically bad situation with a horrifically bad future on the horizon.
Yeah, I mean, we know that Rudy Gay asked out as far back as this past summer. We know there had been multiple trade discussions that the team never pulled the trigger on. You know, we don't know how far any of those went. We, you know, you get what little bit leaks out here and there, but there was never like this deal's on the brink and then it got backed off at the last minute or anything like that. But it really sucks knowing that there was an opportunity to convert Rudy Gay into other assets. And now not only do you lose that possibility, and obviously, you know, that's the least, it's the small concern in the big picture. We're concerned about Rudy's long-term health and his recovery, and it sucks for him and all that. But realistically, we're fans of the team. We're going to look at the impact there as well. You know, and you know, when we really look at it, it's like, okay, you had this ownership group that wants to win, but did they put too much on the winning now and not look at that big picture, which short-sighted moves has been a critique of this team for a long time now. And at a certain point, you know, I'm playing devil's advocate for you here. You mentioned the analogy of someone learning how to win, but I mean, I've got a 1.5-year-old and eventually he stops doing the same thing over and over when every time it results in him hitting his head, he eventually figures out to stop doing that.
Yeah. And that's the tough part. You have a lot of voices in the ownership group, one louder than all. And I mean, it's no secret. I'm not telling tales out of school. There are many in the ownership group that want a full rebuild. There are some that want to keep DeMarcus, some that don't want to keep DeMarcus. But I can tell you from the top and the decision makers that matter in that ownership group, because let's be honest. Let's talk about the ownership group for a second, okay? How can I put this? The bulk of the ownership group are basically glorified season ticket holders. And that's not, I'm not insulting them. And I'm not trying to disrespect them. I'm saying that's just the fact. They have different councils within the ownership group, you know, the playing the win group made up of local owners. And then you have the executive board and that's your guys like Vivek and Raj and Masrov and those dudes, Andy Miller. And then, you know, like the locals, Kevin Nagel, Phil Oates, Lisa, a few others, And you know, there's discussions, but it's mostly like, hey, here's what we're going to do. And what are your thoughts? And okay, we've got your thoughts and now we're going to move on. I mean, that's the way it's run. And listen, that's not an indictment necessarily of Vivek. I mean, the Giants run similar. A lot of ownership groups are run very similar when you have massive members of an ownership group and not just a Mark Cuban. But there've always been, listen, you get 50 Kings fans in a room, diehard Kings fans, guess what? They're going to have different ideas, as you well know, running that board as to what to do to improve this team. And these people are simply rich, powerful owners that are Kings fans. They all want to win. Nobody is saying, let's suck and be stupid. They're not only fans, and it's not only an ego thing because you want to be behind something that's successful, but it's their money is involved in it too. It's hard for me to hate these guys because I know they want to do it, but it's kind of hard when you've got one thing pulling one way and one thing pulling the other. And let's back up for a second. You know, you go back to the Philadelphia trade. That was a win now trade. Hey, let's give up on Stauskas to give Sam Hinkie a piece. Let's throw all this stuff out there to create cap room so we can grab Kufis and Bellinelli and Rondo and Caron Butler. You know, those were all vet moves. And the worst case scenario has happened because their bet was all. The directive was we have to be in the playoffs by the time the year the Golden One Center opens. That has to be a playoff year. There was no ifs, ands, or buts. Everything was moving to that direction. And now they will not, barring some crazy miracle, they're not going to be a playoff team. And even if they were a playoff team this year, 8 seeds swept in and out, half the stadium filled with Warriors fans, right when they're in the middle of the sweep, losing by 20 points a game. And now what do you got? You got $83 million and change possibly on the books, depending on who opts in and out. But they're all player options. There's no team options, just a few of the guarantees and non-guarantees they have in there with a couple of the guys they signed last year. So they don't have a tremendous amount of cap room. They have one asset really tradable in DeMarcus Cousins. The only way DeMarcus Cousins, Greg, does not re-sign is if the Kings decide that he's not going to re-sign. DeMarcus Cousins will re-sign with this team, and that is a 1,000,000,000% fact. So where do you go from there? And by the way, I'm a huge fan of Dave Yeager. Here's another thing. Dave Yeager's, I think, a wonderful coach. I think he's great. But once again, you brought in a veteran coach who's used to coaching veterans, who is not interested in a rebuild. So why do you think we're all frustrated that Matt Barnes is getting playing time over Malachi Richardson? Because he's not going to play his rookies. He never played his rookies in Memphis. He's not going to do it now. And that's just the type of lack of thought process that goes into a lot of this stuff.
So to kind of take it down that direction, so you know, you mentioned Matt Barnes. That's a huge point of frustration for many of us right now. You know, Matt Barnes, who, by the way, thanks to the injuries to Rudy and Omri, is basically now going to be the key small forward for the foreseeable future. At what point do you expect ownership, or not ownership, sorry, management, to step in and basically stop letting the tail wag the dog and have the roster fit what management's direction is, that almost in a way forces the hand of the coach? You know, so you think about Vlade, you know, I'm not saying there's a lot of offers out there for Matt Barnes right now, but yeah, I mean, a very easy way to make Coach Yeager stop playing Matt Barnes would be to trade Matt Barnes.
Yeah, I don't expect that at all. I don't expect that to happen at all. I think that the two most powerful people not named Vivek Ranadive in the organization are DeMarcus Cousins and Dave Yeager. They can't afford to go through another coach situation. And, you know, I'm not saying this is on the horizon, but Dave Yeager in the past, at least in Memphis, was not afraid to speak his mind when management's priorities and his priorities didn't mix. And Matt Barnes is obviously somebody he trusts. Now, I'm not saying Matt wouldn't get traded, but if you're asking me at what point is ownership or the front office going to step in to try to gut this team, I would highly doubt that's going to happen. We go back to the original philosophy. They still think they're a playoff team. They still think there's a magic move out there that is going to push this team over the top. It doesn't matter if they're whatever they are, 16 and 25 right now. That's not the thought process. The thought process is they're a game and a half or two games out of the eight spot, which means they're really close to being a playoff team. And that is a different style of philosophy. Guys like you and me might say, well, yeah, I guess they're technically close to being a playoff team because they're close to the eight spot. But any other year, and they're six, seven games back. They're literally closer to being the last team record-wise in the Western Conference than they are to be the seventh seed. So, but that's not the way I believe ownership looks at it. I believe ownership looks at it as we would cut off our nose to get in the playoffs this year, because that is the end-all, be-all goal.
And that's terrifying to me. I mean, you said a couple things there that are terrifying to me. I mean, the first, that within the organization, Cousins and Yeager would be considered more powerful or more influential than you know, Vlade, Ken Cannell, the front office. Again, that's tail wagging the dog. That's not the way a successful basketball operation runs. I mean,
okay, well, let me stop you right there, though. See, here's the thing, Greg. I mean, ask yourself this. You're on the board. You have as much a finger on the pulse of Kings Nation, or whatever you want to call it, as anybody else. Dave Yeager gets fired tomorrow, / Vlade Divac gets fired tomorrow. Which one do you think is going to rain down more hatred and ridicule from the public and the fans and the national media in general? And I don't think there's a doubt that by far it would be the firing of Dave Yeager. And now you have an insight into how some of these decisions are made.
But, and you're right, absolutely. If they fired Dave Yeager, it would cause fire and brimstone and mockery and everything else to come raining down on the franchise, unlike a firing of Vlade Divac. That is 100% correct. But if you are making moves as a franchise based on what Twitter will say about you, you have already lost.
Well, I'll step back. I'll step back a little bit here, And I'll say that although I strongly, personally, as a Kings fan, disagree with the philosophy of, you know, sneak into the eight and see what, I hate that philosophy. I hate it. I think the bulk, it's close, but I think the bulk of the national media and the bulk of the fans agree with the step back and reboot, rebuild style, yet they're plugging forward. So that kind of contradicts, you know, yes, I think that ownership is sensitive to what the national media says and what the fans say. And I think we saw a lot of that with the hiring of George Karl, and I was as loud as anybody on that. And I that is a big scarlet letter on my face. But I think if they were truly cowing to national pressure, we'd probably see more of a pullback. So it's kind of a weird dynamic there.
Yeah, and you're right. I mean, they do a lot of moves that completely fly in the face of what quote-unquote conventional wisdom or public opinion would say they should do. But then at the same time, we hear about them being hesitant to do certain things because of the perceived backlash. It's such a weird dynamic. Now, the other thing that scares me about is you talk about, you know, success is defined as reaching the eighth seed no matter what. I mean, we've seen that before. The Charlotte Bobcats, before they went back to being the Hornets, they did exactly that, built around Gerald Wallace, and they pulled together a team of veterans that could make the playoffs at any cost. And it set that franchise back an additional 3 to 4 years by trying to achieve that one goal.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
I'm terrified of that.
you want to be, I mean, this is going to be the most depressing podcast ever. Here's what I'm terrified of. I'm terrified of Philadelphia having a better record than this team by the end of this road trip, much less the end of the season. I'm terrified. Now, listen, the real scary thing is obviously the Kings winning the lottery and having to swap it. But even if the Kings got the 4 or 5 pick and had to swap it for the 11, that's still bad, but that's not catastrophic. I'm terrified by the fact that they don't have a ton of room next year, nor do they have a ton of assets to move. I'm terrified that Bogdan Bogdanovic is the Christ-like savior we want him to be, but he's really not. I'm terrified that probably once this team realizes they have to rebuild, it's going to be right around time for 2019 to roll around, and that unprotected first-round pick is gone. And here's the nightmare that nobody is thinking of. Now, Greg, and I'm sure couple of our friends over there have commented on this before. I might as well have a pair of pom-poms in my hand with number 15 on one and DeMarcus Cousins' face on the other. I'm an unapologetic homer and defender of Boogie in many cases. But as a follower of this team, I have to allow for the following possibility. The reason I say it is a mortal lock that DeMarcus is going to sign this summer unless the Kings do something differently, and I put this out there today. The difference between what the Kings can pay DeMarcus Cousins over the life of his contract and what any other team could is about $80 million. That $80 million right now today would equal the 17th highest contract value in the NBA. That's Ryan Anderson at 80. So here's the nightmare. And I'm not doubting DeMarcus Cousins' loyalty. I swear on my children, I haven't heard a whisper of this. I'm not trying to plant seeds, but it is something that has to be considered. What if this team finally figures out that they can't do it and they win 30-something games this year and next year looks just as crappy? DeMarcus signs the contract, and then he wants out. So, you know, we're not even thinking that far ahead, but what if they then wait too late to go to a rebuild and then he says, you know what? This is stupid. I can't handle it. I'm 27. I'm 28 years old. I can't do it. I can't do another freaking rebuild. I've given you guys 8 years to figure your lives out. You haven't done it. I got to go. Well, on one hand, his trade value is a little bit higher because now you have him locked up forever, but now you're dealing from a position of weakness. So all the things we said before, plus that whole DeMarcus drama doesn't go away just because he signs his contract. You still got to build around him, and they don't have any wood to build around the guy. You're just pushing. You just keep pushing the ball down the road a little bit.
Well, and we got some clarification since the CBA was officially signed today. We got all the details on that designated player exception. So if he signs that, he would not be eligible for a trade until at least a year later. So there wouldn't be drama for at least 1 year. But
Yeah, there you go.
But you're right. I mean, it's a unique situation because on one hand, he's no longer an expiring that the receiving team is at the risk of losing the player. But on the flip side, yeah, you're dealing from the position, you know, you think about Denver dealing Carmelo or Orlando dealing Dwight Howard, where everyone in the world knows that this guy's going. It's just a matter of when, and your leverage is minimal. And we've seen situations where that drags out for months or years, and it sours a fan base, which the Kings can't really afford to sour much more of their fan base. And it puts you in a crappy spot. I mean, some people mentioned it in the threads today, and I'm pretty firmly and pretty publicly, I'm tend to give Boogie more leeway than some. I don't think you should trade him, but at the same time, if you're going to, you do it now. I mean, if ever there was a time where you might say, okay, it finally makes sense. I mean, it might be to restock the cupboard now while you still can, while you still have Boogie. And yeah, the receiving team could not sign him to that same level of extension, but you know, they would still have the option of offering him a pretty healthy extension and locking him up, you know, before he really hit full unrestricted free agency. They would have over a year with him. I mean, there'd be some value there that might be worth considering capitalizing on. I mean, I don't know that you're at that point, but when you look at what the Kings have to work with, like you said, there's not a whole lot to suggest you can build around him. So it kind of puts you back at that square one of do you or do you not try to continue with building around Boogie, or do you try to cash in while your value's high?
Or you sign him this summer, you give him the extra $80 million, and then you turn around and you flip him the following, or excuse me, not the following year, but the year after. I mean, that's the three options. You flip him now, you flip him in 2 years, or, you know, Boogie Cousins retires as a King, or, you know, he plays 12 years for the Kings and then he pulls a Mitch Richmond and goes to some other team to win a title, you know?
Yeah. I mean, we see it more and more these days. I mean, now these new extensions are designed to keep guys in place, but even still, it can only do so much. Now, we've kind of talked about what kind of strategy do you go for going forward. You have begun pining for the Kings to go out and bring in Sam Hinkie. Tell me about that strategy and why you want to go with that.
Well, first, let me just rewind here about 5 minutes in this podcast. Remember, I also wanted George Karl, so
okay.
Let's take that with a grain of salt. But listen, you know, a lot of people in what I wrote today took it as an indictment of Vlade Divac. And I'm going to say the same thing everybody says, anybody who's ever dealt with him. Vlade is a larger-than-life figure who's just about the nicest, kindest, best human being you can possibly imagine. And I don't think Vlade is as dumb and green as a lot of people think, but I don't think Vlade is a 2017 NBA general manager. I think he's being asked to do something that he's not. I think Vlade is a president of basketball operations. I think he's the guy that sits in the meetings and talks to the players and brings them here. I think he's the guy that uses his massive connections around the world to check talent. And I think he becomes really the executive face of the franchise. That's what I think Vlade is. I think his talents are being misused. When you have a guy like Sam Hinkie, and this is a story that's developing that I'm just obsessed with. You look at the Sixers and the trust the process, which was a mockery. I mean, people use those three words as a rallying cry for how disgusting Sam ran those Sixers. You had the old guard talking about how he was just screwing up the NBA and destroying one of the core fan bases of the league. I mean, as I said in the article, Philly fans are a lot of things, but they're not apathetic, and he forced apathy on them. But let's look at Philly now, and I think the reclamation of Sam Hinkie is well underway. Now, they're still below 500, and they're not in the playoffs, and nobody's talking championship with Philadelphia. But when you look at their situation compared to ours, they started this whole rebuild after the Kings, you know, long after the Kings last made the playoffs. And in the process, by Hinkie horse trading, you know, like he did with the Kings or with so many other teams, he built a roster of these young guys, and obviously Joel Embiid is the one that sticks out, Ben Simmons is about to make his debut. That's the number one pick in the draft. And he's still got Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor just kind of pining away, and somebody's going to take a chance on one of those guys if they don't end up developing for Philadelphia. But then on top of that, you look at, you know, he's got swap rights, or they, I should say, have swap rights this year with the Kings. They have the Lakers' top three protected pick next year. They have the Kings' first rounder the year after. They have this huge stockpile of second rounders, and I think they only have $33 million committed next year, which gives them a possible $60-something million dollars to spend, and all of those players are either signed or are team options. There's no player options there. So you look at Philly, and even though, you know, Colangelo's went in and kind of cashed in the treasure trove of chips that Hinkie had compiled, these are the fruits of his labor. And I don't know of a single Kings fan that wouldn't trade situations and roster straight across with Philadelphia and be the happiest in the world. Basketball is alive again in Philadelphia. They're on the national stage. Joel Embiid is a larger-than-life superstar. And I would argue, on top of all that that I just mentioned, that Sam Hinkie did all that despite some pretty bad luck. Who the hell thought Okafor, what was he, the two pick, was going to turn out this way? Nerlens Noel had some knee issues, but at the very least, you thought he'd be a plus defender guy, a goalie type in the NBA that played 35 minutes a night. And then Ben Simmons has already missed half the year. So I would say that his process was hindered by bad luck, and they're still beginning to get results. So for me as a Kings fan, Greg, at some point I just go, you know what, dude, I don't want this team to lose anymore, but I want a light at the end of the tunnel. And this is about the worst possible situation a team could be in, the Kings, right now. And then I look across at Philadelphia and I go, my God, that's amazing. And Sam Hinkie lives about, you know, six blocks away from a couple of our owners. He's teaching over at Stanford. He's hanging out in the Bay Area. He's got a one-year non-compete. When I look, and I would invite everybody to go back and look at some of the recent articles on Sam Hinkie over the last year and further back, how he stacked his scouting department, how they were everywhere compiling analytics, data, looking at every game there was, just obsessed. That is the almost exact polar opposite of what our understaffed, undermanned, underexperienced scouting department. Our scouting department, if people actually paid more attention to our scouting department, it's one of the thinnest, smallest, most overworked scouting departments in the NBA, if not the worst. And that's the core of the future of the team. So you look and you look at the bread covered, whatever the hell you call it, it's bare. So that's where I start thinking Sam Hinkie might be an attractive choice.
So here's what I find interesting about the Hinkie love is Hinkie never suggested that what he did in Philadelphia was the only way to build a team. And I think it's potentially a mistake to think that if he was given another shot, he would replicate the same steps that he went through in Philadelphia. The big thing he always said was that the entire league was built around finding a star. The best way to find and get a star was through the draft. So you load up on lotto tickets and wait for one to hit. I would argue that if he came to Sacramento, he might view it as, we've already got the lotto ticket. Now we just got to build around him. So it might be a completely different process than what you saw before. Now, the other thing that I would say would be a potential issue is that once Hinkie had a plan, he followed it. I don't think he took it too extreme by tanking out the way he did. Where he probably took it too far was that he hindered the development of some of his own players by taking his process too far. Like, he had Ish Smith, who wasn't by any means a star point guard, but was a competent point guard, and traded him off for an extra second-round pick at one point. And that team desperately just needed someone who knew how to run, bring the ball up and competently initiate an offense to help the development in-game of their offense and their players. Now, did that maybe earn them an extra loss or two, which helped them in the ping-pongs? Of course. But in the long term, I think it may have caused more detriment. And the other thing that's being forgotten already, because the backlash against Hinkie when he got fired was extreme, and now it's swinging the other way now that Embiid is hitting, is that Hinge had major issues with communication with his staff, with his players, and with other GMs. Like, his communication issues were a pretty poorly kept secret around the league. And I don't know if that's something you want to bring into the fold necessarily.
I mean, they're all good points. So I'll start with the Ish Smith thing. I mean, you kind of covered it, but I think he almost purposely, when he saw talent, his whole idea was, okay, we're not there yet in this process. So I need to flip this talent. I'm not interested in developing that talent. He was interested in developing Okafor, and obviously Embiid got hurt 2 years in a row, and that kind of screwed them. It may have ended up actually being a blessing in disguise, because I don't think it's a coincidence he went after Noel with the injury. Then he went after Joel Embiid. He went after Dario Saric because he knew he had basically three of those guys stashed away. But then when it comes to his communication, I think part of that has to be acknowledged too, though, is that Sam Hinkie was an unknown, and his process was an unknown, and his entire philosophy was an unknown. I think by this time next year, I don't think you're going to see a full reclamation of his reputation, but I think the next team that hires him, and there will be a next team that hires him, they're going to know exactly what they're getting with Sam. There's not going to be any surprises. I think even though, excuse me, he was clear with Philly ownership, I think it was all good for a time, but eventually the media and the fan base will beat you down. I think the fan base, the media, and the ownership, whatever the next group that brings him in, they're going to understand what they're getting with Sam Hinkie. They're going to be prepared for it a little better than Philadelphia was. And I think part of the communication problem is, and I don't want to go too crazy now on this because, again, we're dealing with a below 500 team that hasn't done jack, but I think if at best, when you look throughout history in any field, whether it's an important one like real life and politics and blah, blah, or in sports, when you have visionaries that go against the grain, that do things that have never been done before, a lot of times they got to plug their ears and keep their eye on the ball and focus. And sometimes that's taken as lack of communication. And at other times, these guys are just saying, listen, this is the plan. This is the process. I've explained it to you 30 different ways. I don't want to win the game tomorrow night. I don't care about winning the game in 2 weeks. I don't care that Jane in Elk Grove has written a 5-page letter about how she was a season ticket holder for 20 years and now she's not renewing. I don't care because I know when this thing works out, and it will work out, that everybody's going to come back in droves and all of those op-eds are going to be forgotten and the laurels will fall and we will get wins. And I think it's going to be a little bit different the next time around for him. I think you're right. But I think that's because people are going to be more prepared and understand what the process is. And I also think you're going to see some other people try to duplicate it as well.
So to bring it all back around then, given what we know about the many different voices in Kings ownership and some of the sensitivities to what's being said about the team in the media, do you really think the Kings are the right team to endure the process?
Well, you know, that's the thing. It will take a massive shift in philosophy for these guys. And they really do try to keep a pulse on the fan base and everything else, but they try to do the right thing. They really do. I believe they do. I think if they felt like, if they got to a point where they said, my God, what kind of a mess have we gotten ourselves into? Consumer confidence is at an all-time low. Season ticket renewals are way the hell down. And they will be way the hell down, by the way, these season ticket renewals. We've got open seats at this brand new arena in the second year, no hope in sight, and everybody is bitching and moaning and whining for good reason. Maybe now finally, what is it? You know, when you have an addiction or something, one of the first things you have to admit is you're powerless. Maybe they throw their hands up and say, we are powerless. We've tried and tried and tried, and we're not doing it correctly. And I don't know how to get out of this mess, and I need some help. And that's where the beauty of a guy like Sam comes in. And maybe it won't be Sam Hinkie. But, Greg, the thing that maybe attracts me as much to Sam as anything else is that, and again, I wrote this, our ownership group, they're a bunch of nerds. I mean, at the core, they're nerds. They're computer nerds. And I say nerd with the nerds run the world. I say that with all respect. They're powerful, rich nerds with a strong sense of competition and ego. And I mean that in a good way. And Sam Hinkie is like the Pied Piper of NBA nerds. I mean, he's the Daryl Morey type. He is that new wave of NBA nerd who can speak nerdese. Vlade Divac isn't a nerd. Ken Catanella is kind of a nerd, but Vlade Divac isn't. They're designed old school guys like Vlade. Put together a good team, get the big man down low, get a point guard, win. Oh, you have analytics? That's cute. Yeah, I'll kind of read, but then I'm going to fall asleep 5 minutes into it because I don't care about analytics because I use the eye test and this is what I see. Whereas Sam is like, here's the deal. We're going to get an army of scouts, like 50 deep, okay? And they're all going to be like 24 years old and have pimples. And we're going to spread them out all over the world. And I'm going to look at like an Encyclopedia Britannica of all these analytics. And Vivek and Andy Miller and Mark and Raj and all you guys that have these analytical minds, I'm going to give you like this crazy Excel spreadsheet report constantly. I mean, you want to talk about like Dean Oliver and those analytics guys, screw it. Sam Hinkie is the king of them. So I do think it's an attractive marriage that could work in the sense that you need to bring the nerds together. The problem is our nerds don't know basketball yet. That nerd does.
I love the idea that our nerds don't know basketball yet is kind of our selling point on a GM hire.
I mean, they're trying their asses off. I mean, if there's one thing I hope people glean from this, I'm not afraid to point out that these guys aren't doing the right things. But again, I know in their hearts they want to win so freaking badly. But, dude, you know what? My 8-year-old son, I just got back from basketball practice from him about an hour ago. He loves basketball. It's his first year. And he wants to make a free throw so bad, so bad. He practices all the time. He just can't yet. He's not big enough. He's not strong enough. He almost gets there. He hits the front of the rim a couple times. Just because you want something does not always mean if you work hard enough, you're going to get it. You have to have a set of innate skill and tools to be able to accomplish that goal. And I just don't think IQ-wise, as an organization, we're there yet.
All right, and I think it's probably worth noting. You mentioned some of the owners may be classified as, you know, nothing more than a glorified season ticket holder. I'm obviously not in Sacramento. I don't have tickets to any games, but you and I could probably be classified pretty similarly. We're glorified fans and season ticket holders in most respects of our analysis. So all this is mostly just in good fun, but
100%, 100%. And when I say stuff like that, you know, out of context, you know, somebody could take a quote from any part of this podcast and make it look like I'm trying to kill ownership. And
oh, that's and what I'm planning really on
happy.
Doing.
Of course, oh, believe me, I'll look at the comments, or I won't look at Jesus. But I really do mean it with like a smile on my face. Like, there's nothing to smile about right now, but when I look at these owners, I'm not calling them stupid. I'm not calling them arrogant. I'm not calling them narcissistic or incompetent in the true sense of the term. And I know I keep repeating myself, Greg. I'm just saying, imagine a group of 40 diehard Kings fans, and they bought the Kings. And the only difference between us, you and me, and the people listening right now, and the people that are going to comment on Sacktown Royalty, is that we might have just been fans of this team a little bit longer. Oh, and we're about 9 zeros, 8 zeros, 7 zeros away from what these dudes put in their bank accounts. But they're fans. They want to win. I just don't think they quite understand how yet. They need some help.
Well, hopefully it starts to become clear. You know, maybe the Rudy Gay injury, if it can have a silver lining, maybe it does force the team to shift directions and explore something other than chasing the 8 seed. But we will obviously have to wait and see. The Kings, I'm sure, are still trying to figure out what is next in the wake of the injury. And I'm sure we'll be watching. Dave, for the 0.0001% of people listening to this who may not know where to find all of your normal day-to-day talking, where would they find you?
It's plug time. Hey, now. Plug time. Doing the drive 6 to 9 a.m. on KHDK. That's 6 to 9 a.m. Pacific. You can check out the podcast at KHDK.com, you know, at Carmichael Dave and all that fun stuff. I would like to say something, though, real quick.
Sure.
As we wrap about the website and about the commenters specifically, because I've said a couple things I want to clarify. There are two websites in Sacramento, fan sites, whatever you want to call them, blogs, whatever, that I follow, and that's you guys predominantly, of course, KingsFans.com. And KingsFans.com is more of kind of a chill, laid back. You know, they don't really do much editorial-wise, and obviously writing content, stuff like that. It's basically a message board, and I dig those guys. And I spend a ton of time, you know, not trolling, lurking.
Mm-hmm.
I read almost every article and I read almost every comment on there because it helps me. I'm in a bubble sometimes, and I want to hear what people are saying. And obviously things can get skewed. I can go to your site and, you know, DeMarcus needs to be run out of town. I can go over to the other site and it's, you know, sign him for $400 million. So, but anybody in this business whose job it is to talk about the Kings, for example, that I think doesn't talk to or read as many people as possible and doesn't take every opinion seriously, you know, the real ones, not the, you know, Boogie sucks, screw him, blow, you know, that's actually more of a logical take, but I mean, you know, the ones, the trolls.
Yeah.
But so like, I mentioned like guys like Otis and Rick and there's, who's the other one? Like, there's a few that whether they're, you know, from a narcissistic angle, critical of me or critical of the team, or we're off the wrong page. You know, the one thing I've learned over the years, man, is that if you don't have a thick skin, if you take yourself too seriously, you're not long in this world. And I value every single thing those guys say, especially, and I hate to admit this, but the more negative they are, quote unquote, or the more, for example, like those guys that were goofing on me about the Cousins interview, like I read that stuff. I take it to heart almost too much. I really am interested. We may go back and forth and we may spar at times and we may disagree, but anybody who spends that much time on a website reading and commenting, no matter how off base or on base they are, somebody who's passionate about this team that no longer has a single, you cannot accuse Kings fans of being bandwagon in any way, shape, or form these days. So I think that quote unquote garbage blog like yours, it's so funny to me to see the condescension from your mainstream media at these tinfoil hat wearing mother's basement, cheesy poof eating people that dare comment about somebody who has a real credential and covers the team for a real company. Dude, F that noise. The moment people in media begin to wake up and realize that the bread and butter in this low attention span, high consumption environment, the moment they start to realize that the bread and butter are the people on these forums, they're the people that are having these passionate discussions day in and day out, is the moment that they're going to extend their careers a little bit. And the ones that don't catch on with that, they're just going to die out. They're just going to die out and become impotent and irrelevant. So I guess it's a long-winded way of sending a shout out to everybody on that site and every commenter, whether you hate me or love me, whether you hate DeMarcus or love DeMarcus, hate the Kings, whatever it is. I admire and respect the hell out of people that are that passionate. I really do. I think you guys are doing some freaking wonderful stuff over there.
I think that's a perfect note to end it on.
Except Akins. Except Akins. He sucks.
Well, yeah.
And
I mean,
Pippen.
I think that goes without saying.
Pippen needs to stop beating people up around the Sacramento area. That's what he needs to stop doing.
Okay. Now you're just trying to get me in trouble. All right.
I am.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode. As always, you can subscribe on iTunes. Leave us a rating. Leave us a comment. We should be on all the other different services where you may find podcasts. If we're not somewhere where you get your podcast, let me know. I'll do what I can to get us on there. And, of course,
turn it purple. Turn the whole thing purple. I want to see all thumbs up. Purple, baby.
And, of course, leave us comments in the thread where you can wreck things and make them purple. And until next time, thanks for listening.
Get get a free audiobook and 30-day trial today by signing up at www.audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty. That's www.audibletrial.com/sacktownroyalty.